chapter 17. It's 1 Kings 17. I'll be reading verses 8 through 16. Then the word of the Lord came to him, "Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to feed you." So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, "Bring me a little water in a vessel that I may drink." And as she was going to bring it, he called to her and said, "Bring me a morsel of bread in your hand." And she said, "As the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And now I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in and prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." And Elijah said to her, "Do not fear, go and do as you have said. But first make me a little cake of it and bring it to me, and afterward make something for yourself and for your son. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, the jar of flour shall not be spent, and the jug of oil shall not be empty until the day that the Lord sends rain upon the earth." And she went and did as Elijah said. And she and he and her household ate for many days. The jar of flour was not spent, neither did the jug of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord that he spoke by Elijah.
Morning. This morning, we're going to begin. I got this on backwards. That's what part of the problem is. There we go. We're going to start for the month of July. We're going to do a series on events in the life of Elijah, one of the characters of the Old Testament. Elijah, as a prophet, held a prominent place in the lives of the Jewish people. His story begins in 1 Kings 17 and goes through 2 Kings chapter 2. The high esteem the Jewish rabbis held for Elijah is seen in their writings, that they just usually referred him as the prophet. And so he was kind of the prototype, even though there had been prophets before him. David had Gad and Nathan who administered to him. And there's others mentioned in Scripture before Elijah. He is seemed to be a place of prominence. A New Testament verification of that, I think, is the Transfiguration. Because when you look at the Transfiguration account in Matthew 17, and Jesus takes Peter, James, and John up onto the Mount of Transfiguration, Elijah appears with Moses to Jesus there when he is transfigured. So that kind of indicates the significance that Elijah had in terms of the story of the Old Testament. So Elijah makes his appearance during the reign of Ahab. Ahab was the son of Omri, who ascended to the throne of Israel after a very tumultuous period in the history of the northern kingdom. Three kings, Baasha, Elah, and Zimri, all ruled as king within a period of slightly more than 2 years. One died, was assassinated, another one took over, and he was assassinated. And so Ahab's father brought stability, and Ahab succeeded him to the throne. And so before the story that we're looking at in this morning's text, Elijah has appeared, and his first act, public act, or recorded act anyway, as a prophet, is because of the wickedness that Ahab and his wife Jezebel had brought to the nation of Israel. And that wickedness consisted of going farther than Jeroboam had done by worshiping Jehovah through golden calves, the image of the golden calves that he set up at Dan and Bethel, and telling the people of Israel they didn't need to go to the temple in Jerusalem. That was sinful enough, but Ahab and Jezebel added to that the practice of Baal worship. And Baal was a Phoenician god, and Jezebel was the wife of the king of Sidon. So the first thing that Elijah does in the text that precedes what Jonathan read to us is that he says that there will be a drought. There will be no rain in Israel. And that was a direct challenge to Baal. Baal was the god of rain and thunder and also of harvest, because you have to have the rain to have the harvest. And so by saying there's not going to be any rain, Elijah was really saying, by the proclamation of Jehovah, Baal is rendered powerless. Baal will not have his power exerted over God's people Israel. And after he made that proclamation, he is directed by God to go to the wilderness that is just east of the Jordan by a brook and stay there, isolated away from King Ahab and his wife Jezebel. But the drought became so severe that the water of that brook dried up. And that leads us to the story that Jonathan read about this morning, because God directs Elijah to journey to the town of Zarephath in Sidon. And this is where this story takes place. There is even some irony there that the problems that were in Israel had come to Israel from Sidon, along with Jezebel when she came to be the queen with Ahab. And so we have, interestingly enough, God sending Elijah to Sidon for refuge from Ahab and Jezebel. So when we look at this story, and I think it's probably a fairly familiar story. In fact, this whole series is built around familiar stories about Elijah, the kind of stories that the children learn in the Sunday morning Bible classes or the Wednesday night Bible classes. And so what we are told here is that God had commanded the widow in the town to provide for Elijah. Now, we are told nothing about the delivery of this command. We don't know how she got the command. Whether God spoke directly to her, whether somebody else gave it to her, whether she had it in a dream. The Bible is completely silent about that, so I have nothing more to add. But God's hand is clearly seen in this, because it says he commanded this widow that she was going to be providing for a prophet of God. And as the story unfolds, the very first person that Elijah meets as he comes to this little village of Zarephath is this woman. She's out gathering sticks. And so when we look at that, we can see God's hand very clearly by providence, in addition to whatever revelation was involved for the woman to be prepared to meet Elijah. And this is an interesting woman that is God's choice here. She's not a woman of means. She is a woman that actually is without any means. When we look further into the story, we see that she was really destitute, and she was desperate. She had so little food at the home for her and her son. And in those days, widows often were in very bad shape, because if the husband was not there to provide the income, if they did not have a relative that took them in or something of that nature, their times were very difficult for them to fare for themselves. And so what we really see here in the story, the detail that's given to us, is she really tells Elijah she was gathering the sticks because she had so little food, she wanted to get enough sticks for a fire. She was going to go home and fix the rest of the food that she had, the bread, the flour that she had, and feed her and her son one last time, and she thought starvation was what was right ahead of her. And so that leads us to a very interesting observation here, and that is that she was not in very good condition from our way of looking at things. This is the way it's described. And yet, being in that kind of condition and that desperate, resigned to death type of condition, when Elijah asks her for water, she immediately responds. She's on her way to get him water. Evidently, the drought was not as severe there, or because of whatever sources of water might be at Zarephath, the water was still there. She's doing this last deed to take care of her son and herself and then prepared to die. And this stranger that she has never met, but God has evidently told her in some way that he's coming, says, "I need a drink of water," and she immediately goes to get it. And interestingly enough, as she's leaving, Elijah asks her to bake him a flour cake. We might call it a biscuit or something of that nature, just using flour and oil, that he might have something to eat. And it's really only when he asks for food that she volunteers the information about her poverty. And, you know, my mind, as I read this story, I think, you know, that for most of the human beings I know, that would have probably been the first thing. "Don't you see I'm gathering sticks? You want me to get you a cup of water? I'm dying here." But that doesn't seem to be her disposition. She was willing to get the water for him, and it's only when he asked her for food and she realized the predicament she was in, she had just enough for her and her son to have one last meal, and she was resigned to those consequences. So then she tells him, I just have a little bit of meal left and a little bit of oil. And so the main aspect of this story is the miraculous aspect of it, as a miraculous provision is made for this widow. Elijah begins by exhorting her, encouraging her. Here is a woman who is resigned to the fact that she is at her wit's end. She's at the end of her material, I won't say wealth, she's at the end of her material being, really. And she's about to use it all. And so Elijah says to her, "You don't fear. Do not fear." And I think it's interesting that Elijah doesn't start out by saying, "Look, you don't know what I'm about to do. You have nothing to worry about here." He just tells her, "Don't be afraid. Do not fear your situation." And he simply says, "You go make me a cake. And after you've made me a cake, then you can make some for you and your son too." And that's when she says to him, "I don't have any. There's not enough." But I think it is interesting, at least I gained something from it, that the trust should come before the actual condition. And that she is told to trust and to do what she is asked to do. Then the promise is given that something will be done about it. Because Elijah says, if you just do what I've told you, go make me the cake, and then you can have the rest of that meal to make something for you and your son. That if you will do that, those provisions that you think are at the very end, that you only have enough for one more meal and then your life will be over, that as long as you trust, and as long as you don't fear, and as long as you obey, then your flour and your oil will not run out until the end of the drought. So there's the indication that the drought was still there in Sidon as well, Phoenicia as well. But he says, God will take care of you because you've been ordered to take care of me. And as long as you faithfully do that, you will have flour and oil till the end of the drought. And so the passage tells us that the woman believed Elijah and used the last of her supplies to feed him and her son. And I just look at that and you look and say, well, what did she have to lose? But on the other hand, the nature of human beings, we always look for what's the catch here. And if you've ever been taken advantage by someone, then you kind of weigh everything else that happens in your life by the time you were taken advantage of. And so I think from the standpoint of human nature, I could see the woman very easily listening to everything Elijah says and saying, oh, right, I'm going to give you the last of my food and then I'm not going to have to worry about anything. But we are told that she believed Elijah and that that's what she did. She used that meal, that she, the flour that she thought was the very last of what she had in her supplies, and she did that to provide for Elijah. And the fact was, as Elijah had promised her, that the supply of oil and grain was not exhausted. It says that they ate for many days off of that unending supply. So we're not told at what point of the drought this happens. Obviously not at the very beginning, because at the very beginning he was sent into the wilderness and then he was sent up there. But at least not at the very end either, because he stayed with her and this food was provided for her throughout the rest of the period of the drought. That's a pretty simple story, and I think we probably most of us learned that as children in Sunday school. I think it's one of the very familiar stories that's in there. But as I thought about it, I thought of four observations. And if you want to call that a children's story, then it would be four observations for people who aren't children. The children are amazed at the miracle, and we teach them that story to teach about God's power and about Elijah being a servant of God. But I believe there's some things in here for us as well. Let's talk about those just briefly, and then the time will be gone. The first of those is that the widow did not try to excuse herself from service because of her life situation. And as I said at the beginning, we aren't told exactly how God revealed this to her. But we know how God acted in other times. For instance, we know how God revealed to Mary that she was going to be the mother of Jesus. There's a conversation that goes on between her and an angel. And we know about God calling Moses. And interestingly enough, this woman seems to be more like Mary than like Moses, because you remember when God spoke to Moses from the burning bush and said, I've got a job for you to do, what was Moses' first answer? I can't do that job. You need to get somebody else. I'm not capable. And so while I don't know exactly how God revealed to this woman what her role was to be, she accepted it. And she accepted it in spite of the fact that her situation was not good. She was facing starvation. She was not the possessor of a kitchen just full of foodstuffs to supply to every stranger that came walking through town. So I think there's a lesson there for us, because how often do we face the fact that we can look at various situations of life and conclude that we are not in a position to serve? I can't do that now. There's things going on in my family. I can't do that now. My health is not good. I can't do that now. I've just lost my job. I can't do that now. I'm just way too busy. Think of the number of ways people excuse themselves from service to God because of their life situations. And this widow did not do that. The second thing that I pick up in the story is that I don't see any signs in the story of a bitterness in the woman about her situation. And yet, from the simple facts we're given, it's an obviously dire situation. She is impoverished. She's not homeless. She has a home at this point, but there's nothing in the home. But when Elijah calls upon her and asks her to serve, we don't get a picture of bitterness. And that is something, as human beings, we have to guard against. The various things that can happen to us in our lives, there's nothing unique that happens to us. Somebody else has faced it at some time in their life. And yet some people act like this woman and they just keep on going. Others, it cripples them. And they become embittered about life. And those things just destroy them. The third thing we notice is that this widow is willing to serve using her very limited means. She thought she only had enough for her and her sons one last meal. But when Elijah asked her to please make the cake, she did it. And then received the promise of what she ultimately received. How often are we tempted to feel that we cannot help others? Because we have to preserve what we have for our own needs. And we feel a compulsion to say, this is mine. I need to take care of myself first. I think there's wisdom in what Elijah told her. Take care of the man of God. Do what God has told you to do, and God will take care of the other things. And then the final observation I see in the story is that the widow responded with a willing obedience, and because she willingly obeyed the direction of God, she received a blessing from God in her life as a result. So, as we look at this then, and bring this part to a close, this story confirms the reality of the drought that Elijah had proclaimed. It illustrates the extent that it went throughout all of Israel and even up into Sidon. And that there's some irony here in the drought because it reflects upon the Baal worship that had been brought to Israel from Sidon. And it introduces us to the prophetic ministry of Elijah. The scriptures aren't done with this widow. Next week's lesson will be another story about the widow. And then we'll continue with a couple other well-known stories, better-known stories, in the life of Elijah as we go through the month of July. I believe Brother Andy has the prayer. He will lead that prayer, and then we will be dismissed to our Bible classes.